sorry for the abrupt cutout, folks. I tell you what, BTR must still be having problems. This studio is a little bit crazy right now, let me tell you. Welcome to the Ed Springer Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. I tell you, I am constantly baffled by what's going on these days with BTR, and for our loyal listeners, I apologize for you guys having to listen to all of this and go through this every night. It seems like it's been like that every night this week. BTR did send out a notice that they were having problems, so apparently they haven't gotten them fixed. Either way, we've got a show to do. As you know, Dale the Truth usually joins us every Wednesday night. And he will be here momentarily. Apparently, he's having problems as well. So we need to figure out what's going on. Not sure what's happening right now with BTR, but rest assured, we will find out. So who knows? I'm also being told in the chat room that there are problems with the audio. So we'll have to figure that one out as well as we go along. I tell you, this is this is more than interesting to me, folks. It really is. I'm not sure why we continue having these problems. I wish I was sure of why we continue having these problems. But it is not our issue. It is a server issue at BTR. So we'll find out. We'll find out going forward. And we are waiting for Dale the Truth. So he should be here momentarily. You know what? We are going to take one quick break. Early in the show, I know, and I apologize. I want to see if I can find out what's going on. So let's take a quick break. Give me 1 minute to see what we've got going here. We'll throw you into one of my favorite songs here, Tim Hawkins with The Government Camp. We'll be right back.
Give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Welcome back once again to the Ed Sprengster Show. I apologize for the early break. We're still having some problems, some connection problems with Dale the Truth. Hopefully he will be able to join us shortly. You know, and I've got to tell you, Dale is a constant critic of Insight, or Time Warner Cable, I should say, formerly of Insight. And, maybe that's the problem. I'm not sure. I know BTR has been having problems this week. They have been sending out mail telling us they were for whatever reason. In the case of Dale the Truth, who knows? There was an interesting story that came out late yesterday, though. Time Warner cable customers are actually leaving Time Warner in droves because of bad customer service. It's crazy. So maybe Dale the Truth is right on this, because when you talk about the worst company in America, according to American Customer Satisfaction Index numbers, Time Warner Cable was the third lowest rated cable provider. They've been losing thousands of customers. They lost 140,000 customers at the end of the third quarter last year alone. They just, for whatever reason, maybe they are having some problems, and maybe that's what's going on with Dale the Truth. We shall find out. In the meantime, let's move on with the show. For you guys who are listening in the queue, you can press the number 1 to get heard on air. We will get you on. For you guys using the guest call-in numbers, those numbers are 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you guys that are listening in the queue, if one of you guys want to call in, just kind of see what's going on here, that would be okay as well. I'm getting information in the chat room that they're still having problems getting the show through Internet Explorer and Foxfire. So that's never a good sign. That should be BTR. In the meantime, we're going to assume that everything is going okay for the rest of you guys. So while we're doing that, let's look at what's going on in the world today. One of the biggest stories going on in Kentucky is, yep, you guessed it, the intention to do what? Yes, legalize industrial hemp. It's fantastic news for us in Kentucky. This is one of the things that here at the show we've been pursuing and pushing for many, many years, is legalizing industrial hemp. There's not enough THC in industrial hemp, which is the active ingredient in marijuana, to force anybody to get the munchies to go get a White Castle. I mean, seriously, there's not. It's basically THC-free. There's less than 1%. It's not going to do anything to you. You could smoke a field of it, and it doesn't do anything to you. Well, what happens here is, in Kentucky, we've been trying to push it. Back before marijuana became taboo, Kentucky was actually the leader. The hemp production in the U.S. was actually centered right here in Kentucky, all the way through the mid-1800s, until cotton started coming up, and then industrial hemp went down a little bit. But we were still a major producer all the way up to World War II. And then, of course, back in the 30s, we had William Randolph Hearst and the Rockefellers and everybody else go on this campaign, this lying campaign to the American public. You guys probably remember the movie Reefer Madness and all of that good stuff. Well, anyway, so all these things are going on. Well, in Kentucky, we finally have gotten somebody that's willing to stand up. Kentucky Ag Commissioner Jamie Comer and the State Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Paul Hornback, Senator Rand Paul, and the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce is actually working to propose to legalize hemp. And that's great news for Kentucky if we can get it done. Now, this is just the first step. Don't let me make you guys think that, this is, once we approve it in Kentucky, we can just literally take over. We can't. You're still going to have to get federal approval and everything else. But what happens here is that this is something that, one, you don't have to borrow any money for. Two, you're going to impact the economy immediately. So it's going to immediately create thousands of jobs, okay? So then you've got processors and manufacturers and everything else that's going to relocate to Kentucky, and that's where the jobs will come from. When we look at this, the only way that you're going to be able to capitalize on industrial hemp is to be first. That's it, to be first. You're going to have to be first in the game, and Kentucky is trying to be one of the first in the game to get industrial hemp. Now, for those of you who aren't aware of it, we use industrial hemp in the U.S. every day. Every day. We just import it from Canada and other places around the world. So why are we importing something to use legally in the U.S. that we're not legally allowed to grow? That's a big concern for most of us. Now, on the flip side of this, the Kentucky State Police do not like the idea of industrial hemp because they are scared that there's going to be no way that they're going to be able to distinguish the difference between industrial hemp and marijuana, and it's going to affect this so-called drug war, which we know is a joke anyway. There's no such thing as a drug war, okay? But as Jamie Comer and Rand Paul say, the Kentucky State Police concerns are really unfounded because if you're a grower of industrial hemp, you're going to be licensed. There's going to be a GPS system of devices that's going to be able to identify legal crops, and it's also going to help you reveal which other ones are illegal. So there are checkpoints in place. There are checkpoints in place. Senate Bill 50 was sponsored by Hornback, and so we've got that. Paul Hornback is the senator who sponsored Senate Bill 50 out of Shelbyville. It was filed this month just before they adjourned. The Kentucky State Legislature comes back in February, and then we'll find out what's going to happen with it. But this bill essentially is going to require growers to be licensed annually. They're going to have background checks done by the Ag Department on every licensee. Each licensee is going to be required to plant a minimum of 10 acres. That way they're thinking that would be a good number to keep people who aren't serious from getting any licenses because the licenses are going to be limited. The growers will have to keep sales contracts for 3 years, and they're going to have to provide names of hemp buyers to the Ag Department. So when you put all this into play, I think they've done a great job, an excellent job, of making the case for legalizing hemp, and they've come up with a good alternative plan to make that happen. You know, so I'm kind of curious what you guys think about that, because this could be the first step going forward. Now, as we know, you know, again, once I said a minute ago, we're going to have to get some federal approval somewhere. But right now, this seems to be a good alternative plan to begin the process of legalizing industrial hemp and putting Kentucky at the forefront of that effort. I believe it's our good friend Paul on the line. Are you with us, sir?
I am.
How is your sound quality working?
Well, for some reason, on the internet version, we're not doing so well on the internet version. I'm not convinced it's not my PC, but then again, we know BTR is kind of flaky at times, so could be a BTR interfacing with my PC. The flash component doesn't seem to be behaving properly tonight.
So, but you're hearing everything okay on the phone?
Everything on the phone is fine, yeah.
That's
strange. Listen, on this proposal to open up Kentucky to industrial hemp.
Okay.
On the surface, it looks like a reasonable concept and reasonable proposal. But you know what it really is? It is another way to severely control the market. And because of all these restrictions, who would be most likely be able to meet all these requirements? That's right. Big business. You know, so they can say that this is going to help Kentucky's farmers, but based on just the limited information that you've already mentioned, there's only going to be a handful of farmers, and those are going to be big scale, big name, big money commercial operations.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think that there's any doubt that there's going to be a big commercial operation, Paul. I agree with that to a certain degree. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The whole point I'm trying to get at, though, right now is this. You know, is this the end-all, be-all of what we actually need? No, it's not. But it is going to force the discussion. And quite honestly, they don't have the votes. I don't believe they've got the votes in this session to pass this particular bill. But what it has done, it has brought it back to the forefront so we can address some of those concerns that you're bringing up.
You know, one of the good things about Kentucky when it comes to farmers is that the farmers have a very, very potent and powerful organization called the Kentucky Farm Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot see that the Kentucky Farm Bureau would stand still, let a handful of farmers control a market with the huge upside potential that industrial hemp has. One of the reasons, the main reason, Kentucky farmers need to find a replacement or need to think about industrial hemp is because they have been told that their tobacco cash crops, which involve thousands of small and medium scale farmers. It provided some pretty decent income for them for a long time. We've been told that the tobacco farming has got to go away. Got to go away. And this industrial hemp, with these current rules, stand to absolutely lock out, if you will, the small and medium farmers. So the good news is that having some knowledge of Kentucky Farm Bureau, I just can't see that these rules as they are now proposed are going to stand as is. I just don't see it.
Well, like I said, I don't think it's got the votes to pass in this session anyway. Remember, this is a short session for us. This isn't a long session where they can play with it next year. But what it does, I think ultimately what this bill initially is trying to do is show that, one, we have some powers that be that are willing to pursue this. We've got Senator Rand Paul on a national scale. We've got Ag Commissioner Jamie Comer. And, you know, so we've got the people in place to force this issue, okay? So what it's going to do, it's going to give them the chance to put this up, force the discussion. They're not going to put it through, but it's almost like the preemptive strike. You know, I go through this all the time, and you see this in Frankfurt all the time. You put a bill up this year, they'll go through. They won't pass it, but they'll identify what they think are the problems, and then next year you'll see a better version come in. And I think ultimately that's what we're doing here. The interesting thing for me is that we've actually got an ag commissioner who's got the cojones, if you will, to stand on this. I mean, Jamie Comer got elected, and he told us that this was one thing he was going to push and push and push, and he is following through with that. So we finally got a real ag commissioner, not a basketball player who likes to use that as his personal expense account, like former ag commissioner Richie Farmer. We've got a senator in Washington who is willing to do the work and get involved in issues when nobody else would. So I think what we're seeing are the pieces starting to come together. You know, when we look at the history of marijuana, or when we look at the history of industrial hemp, you know, it was back in the 30s that everything went to crap with it. You know, in the 1930s, William Randolph Hearst went out and bought thousands of acres of timberland so he could make wood pulp for his newspaper business. And, of course, he had a great willing fellow in Rockefeller in Congress, and they put together this lie and disinformation campaign culminating with the movie Reefer Madness that everybody and the brothers heard about. You know, so everybody believed that marijuana was killing everybody, and, you know, it was this crazy thing. So they made it a Schedule I drug, which is when we lost industrial hemp in the first place. You know, this is one way that finally in the 21st century, yeah, I know, folks, all these years later, we're finally starting to look at the realization that, you know, even if it's a big corporation that gets these farms, it's still going to create thousands of jobs, you know, using land that essentially is not being used now anyway. And the flip side of this, Paul, I've got to ask your opinion on this because I'm really curious, because when you look at these corporate farms, and we know what corporate farms are, they're land that has been designated as farmland that we pay corporations and everybody else every year not to grow on. It's just land designated as farmland that we want to keep empty, so they pay the corporations to go out and buy up acres and acres of this stuff, and it helps their bottom line every year because they get a government payoff. Well, I'm curious. If we promote industrial hemp, we start in Kentucky, but if industrial hemp catches on a national stage, would that be another way to end these so-called farm subsidies of these corporate farms? Because industrial hemp is something you can never get too much of. What do you think about that?
Corporate subsidies ending is not very likely, whatever the reason. You're trying to use logic and good common sense in this matter, but this isn't an issue of logic and good common sense. This is an issue of political influence, and large corporations have a tremendous amount of political influence. That's why our federal government, for example, continues to subsidize these large corporations. They are sucking at the public teat of the money supply, and they're just not going to willingly give it up. And they've already bought Congress. So, again, it's highly unlikely that these corporate subsidies will end, and in fact, it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't find ways to increase these corporate subsidies.
Well, I think you're absolutely right in your assessment. I really do. But here's my thing, because the public, you know, as in anything else, if we can get the public excited about something, that's really the only time we get anything done. You know that, and I know that. you have to either sue the government, you have to make charges against somebody in government, or you got to get the public so angry they can't see straight. Right now, with all the focus on this so-called fiscal cliff, the debt that the House is supposed to vote on today, as a matter of fact, I haven't even checked that vote tally yet. You know, all these different things that are going on, this could be a rallying point because the young people are all for industrial hemp. The people my age seem to all be for industrial hemp. You know, I'm 49 years old. You know, people like you who have common sense and good judgment, who happen to be a little bit older than me, are for industrial hemp. We know we see the benefits of this. You know, is this a chance to bring that into the equation? Can we get enough people excited where we can, one, force the issue of getting industrial hemp, and two, force the end of these farm subsidies to non-farmed land? See, that's the key. I don't mind subsidizing a farmer who's out there growing corn for our consumption. I really don't. If that's what we have to do, that's what we have to do. But I have a major problem subsidizing corporations who otherwise are making profits just because they own a piece of land that's not making any money.
Corporations make profits because they employ lots and lots of people. We have lots of people in our economy that are beholden to, for their very livelihood, to these very same corporations.
But we have nobody on that farmland that they're getting paid not to do anything with. They're not paying any money for that.
I'm not so sure that's accurate because with corporate America, they're going to take a look at the best way that they can make the most amount of money. If holding the land and keeping it non-productive and receiving a government subsidy for doing that is the way to do that, I'm sure they will. But on the other hand, if they find that that land is the highest and best use and the most profitable use is to make it productive, they'll do that. And in the process, they will squeeze the small and medium-sized farmers as much as they can. So I'm not so sure they're keeping all that many acres out of production. I'm sure that
here
there are
Kentucky,
some.
Here in Kentucky, I know some individuals who I used to work with at a Ford Motor Company on a personal level. They own land in Hardin County, okay? And what happens here in Hardin County where they own their land at, it's designated as farmland. They get a check every year for thousands of dollars. One of them was receiving a check, I believe he said it was like $11,000 a year, for nothing more than owning this land. He doesn't farm it, doesn't do anything to it. He just bought the land because of the subsidies. He bought it cheap. The subsidies are there because it's designated as farmland. So his land has been paid for many times over, and he gets a check each and every year. Additionally, he also leases that land out on a sharecropper basis. So he has people come in, plant tobacco, take care of the tobacco and everything else, strip the tobacco, sell the tobacco, and he gets cut of that pie too. So the government's paying him for land that he doesn't use. Sharecroppers are coming in doing all the work, and he's getting other money there. Now, this is what I'm talking about. It's not just the big corporations. It's the little guys, too, who aren't doing anything more than just having ownership of land. That would be like the government coming in and paying me to cut my grass.
Your guy, if he is renting the land out, it isn't just a mere ownership issue. That land is actually being productive. And while he might be receiving a federal government subsidy for the ownership of that land, they remember, if he's receiving a subsidy to keep it non-productive, and then he's going out and renting it out to sharecroppers and making it productive, he's committing fraud.
No,
he's committing fraud.
I'm not in disagreement with you. The point is, he's getting paid $11,000 a year for that land.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and most of these subsidies are designed to prevent, you know, like wheat, corn, things like that, so they can stabilize the market. That's what farm subsidies are supposed to be doing. Supposed to be stabilizing the market to keep prices up to a certain degree, not at the level we're paying these days. But essentially, it's supposed to stabilize that market. So he's growing tobacco. I don't know what his subsidy clarifies or specifies, but he's being paid $11,000 a year no matter what he does with that land. That's what I'm getting at. It doesn't matter whether he's bringing in sharecroppers or that land is sitting vacant. He's getting $11,000 a year of my tax money to pay him just because he owns a piece of land, whether he does anything with it or not.
I'd be interested in hearing, seeing if you can get somebody to call on the show who actually does that, because even with the government being run the way it has been run for the last couple of decades, it would surprise me if somebody could legally do that.
They legally can. They legally do. He's not the only one that's told me that. And you know what? I'm going to try to get a hold of him. I can't get a hold of him tonight. It's a little bit too late. I'll try to get a hold of him through the rest of this week. This is the last show I do this week. I'll try to get a hold of him and try to see if I can get him on here Monday or Tuesday to see if we can clarify exactly what goes on with that. Because now I'm curious. But, you know, it's the big story for me, though, is all these years we have tried to chastise everything and anything we can that's going to bring money to people. And when you're living in Kentucky, with the amount of land that we have, farming is a major deal. Here's a great opportunity to legalize industrial hemp, bring thousands of jobs. We may not agree with the language of the legislation, and it's not going to pass this session. So we're going to have another year to tweak this. But it brings up the great opportunity to start talking about it, to start bringing it to the forefront, and to start making an issue of industrial hemp again and getting over this William Randolph Hearst and Rockefeller garbage that was started back in the 30s that destroyed our economy on it. So I think it's a great thing. I want to take a quick break. Paul, if you want to stick around, I want to talk to you a little bit about Chimerica. Don't know, for those of you who don't know what Chimerica is, it's now the new USA, the United States of America, brought to you by the Chinese. I refer to it as Chimerica. Yes, you're welcome. That's my term. Stick around, folks. We're going to come right back. You're listening to the Ed Spencer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. right, folks, we are back. Yes, we are back. From what I understand, the problems don't appear to be happening as much. Apparently, if you're using the phone and listening to the show like most of you guys are in the queue, there doesn't seem to be a big problem. However, BTR apparently is having a problem with the actual internet part of the show. So, I apologize for you guys that will check this out later. We apologize in advance. Rest assured, the podcasts always seem to be okay. I was listening to them yesterday, so that seems to work out well for us. Going into break, I was talking about Chimerica. And this is what I mean. And forgive me, folks. I tell you what, this cold just will not go away. United States of America is beholding to China. James Garfield once said that he who controls the money supply of a nation controls the nation. So when we look at that in play, we have to look at the startling reality right in front of us. China basically controls our money. So what are we doing about it? For years now, China has been trying to get into our U.S. energy production. They've been trying to buy up oil and gas, energy markets, and things like that in the United States. In 2005, the last serious attempt that we knew about of China trying to get into the U.S. energy production was when they made an $18.4 billion offer to purchase California-based Unocal. It was blocked, thank goodness, it was blocked by the Bush administration on grounds of it could be a national security risk. Now, when you ask yourselves, how can this be a national security risk? Well, I can tell you this. Do you want foreigners owning and controlling the energy in your country? If they shut down all the energy in our country, what's that going to do to us? Is this a national security risk? I agreed with the Bush administration in 2005. I still agree today. But my, how things change when you move from a Republican president to a Democrat. Once President Obama was elected in October of 2009, he allowed Chinese energy company CNOOC to buy up a multi-million dollar stake in 600,000 acres of Texas oil and gas fields. Now, we touched on this a little bit last night. What we didn't get into, because we were quite frankly running out of time, what we didn't get into is what the real picture looks like today. Since 2009, Beijing has been quietly working with our president and the Obama administration to do even more, but not just get into our oil and gas fields and control our energy. Under the plan that they're working, trying to work with Obama, China would actually own U.S. businesses, U.S. infrastructure, and U.S. land, all with a U.S. government guarantee against loss. Does that sound familiar? We bailed the banks out so they wouldn't have losses. We're going to give the Chinese government a guarantee against loss. Apparently, since the Chinese have so much of our debt, we're running trillion-dollar deficits each and every year, and it's going to continue and get even larger under President Barack Obama in his second term. So apparently, the Chinese were taking ownership in these corporations. The Chinese were taking ownership in these corporations, and they would have high-value U.S. real estate, and nothing would be done. This is all by design because Barack Obama feels like we have to do this to keep China in our good graces. The return is going to be we're going to be able to borrow money at practically 0% interest. Now, I'm not the smartest guy in the world here. I've never claimed to be the smartest guy in the world here, and I use that term a lot. But how is it that we are sitting here giving China access to our way of life? I don't understand this. He who controls the money of a nation, the money supply of a nation, controls the nation. If we need further proof that we are being taken over from within. Now, I know that sounds kind of crazy to a lot of people. Oh, my God, is Ed on another conspiracy rant? No, it's not. If Garfield was right in his statement that he who controls the money supply of a nation controls the nation, and I personally and most people I talk to believe that he was 100% correct about that, then what happens when that nation also controls not only your money supply, but your energy production and your cost? Now, you think about that. We already know that there's a plan out there to get our energy prices just for gasoline alone up to double what they are now. They want to stop driving cars. What's going to happen when you own two of those? You are forced to comply in order to survive. It's that simple. Paul, are you still on the line with us?
Yeah.
What do you think about that, man?
About the Chinese influence?
What do you think about the President of the United States bringing China in here with open arms to basically take over our energy markets?
Well, the taking over the energy market is kind of the incidental effect of the President's political philosophy. The whole liberal way of looking at life is that they don't like confrontation. And as a result of that particular behavior and desire, people who are of the liberal mindset will naturally acquiesce to anyone or any entity that shows power. This going along to get along kind of thing is kind of the liberal mindset. And clearly, Obama is of that mindset. No question about it. So appeasement is the word that is keenly important in the liberal mindset. Appeasement, fairness, and equity and equality, those are all catchphrases. But ultimately, all of that boils down to appeasement, which means that the people of the liberal mindset, they really don't have any core values on which they will stand. The people who founded this country, Ed, as you well know, they were not appeasers. They said, we're tired of being run over by the government in place, the Brits, and we know we can do it better. And they stood up. They showed backbone toward the British. But the liberals, they don't have backbone. You think about all the really liberal individuals that you know, and you can check them off one at a time as not having any backbone. Now, they think they've got backbone because they're very vocal. They think they've got backbone because they take on controversial issues. But if you challenge them with the facts, they back down because they can't refute facts. They want to appease. So and this, unfortunately, has found its way into our national foreign policy. Appeasement.
And that's the whole thing. When do Americans get tired of appeasement? I mean, here's a quote. Yu Kuo, he's a professor of economics in the School of Public Policy and Management at Tsinghua University in Beijing. He's talking about all of this stuff. And here's the reality. China owns over $1.17 trillion in U.S. Treasury securities today. It's money that we can't pay back. We can't pay back. It's that simple. So rather than being forced into a situation where we have to pay back, okay, our government, our leader, Barack Obama, is willing to give up U.S. national interest to a communist government. You know, when you look at this, the national debt is in excess of $16 trillion. In 2010, which is the last full year I've got, there was over $70 trillion in unfunded obligations. That includes your Social Security and Medicare benefits. You've got all of these things going on. So Yu Kuo, this economics professor, basically says that with the Obama administration poised to continue trillion-dollar budget deficits into the foreseeable future, anybody that holds U.S. debt would face substantial losses, which would devastate the Asians' hard-earned wealth, and it would terminate economic globalization. There's the key word there, economic globalization. So according to Kuo, the basic idea is to turn Asian savings, particularly China, into real business interest rather than let them be used to support U.S. overconsumption. Now, when we look at that, that's a startling statement in itself. Our overconsumption, not by the bread and butter people on the street like me and you, we're not doing anything. We're out there working a job. We're spending what we make. We're doing our best for the economy. It's the government's overconsumption has bankrupted this country to the point where instead of being a republic, a democracy, insert name here, a free citizenry, we're now going to be owned lock, stock, and barrel by Chinese government. And this is all going on right now. This isn't something that we don't know about. This is what mainstream media is ignoring. How do we get to that point, Paul? Isn't that alarming?
Well, it goes back to the whole appeasement philosophy. And remember, corporations are kind of sorted into appeasement. They're not really a morally upright operation. Corporations exist not to advance social issues necessarily, although some of them kind of stick their nose into that kind of stuff. But their mere existence is simply to make money for the small number of people who are their shareholders. And so they have a very myopic focus anyway, very narrow focus. Now, when the corporations kind of talk to one another, and there's a thing in the business world called interlocking directorates, where members of one particular corporation sit on the board of directors of another corporation that may or may not become competitors, but nonetheless, these interlocking directorates, you end up having a relatively small number of people being able to control a lot of the business activities in this country. And since they're into appeasement, it's fairly easy for them to get their folks into Congress. Remember, there's only 535 people in Congress. This is out of a nation of over 360 million. So if you can control the 535 people in Congress, you can control a lot of what happens here in this country. So in this particular case, as much as I would love to blame Barack Hussein Obama exclusively for this appeasement thing, I think we can look toward Congress toward that too, because our Congress has a chance to show backbone. And almost every time there is an issue in which they can show backbone, they fail the test. They fail the test.
Well, and that's exactly it. And that's exactly it. We've got to find out exactly what in the hell is going on here, because we're selling America down the river. I mean, it's that simple. I don't understand why the American people are so lackadaisical that they're just sitting back and allowing it to happen. Let's go to the phones. I believe it's our good friend Andy. Andy, you with us?
Yeah, man. How you guys doing, Paul? I
great.
I was listening to both you guys. I got
hi,
a question,
Andy.
And I mean, how you doing? This interests me. Did we not have the same problem in the 80s? When they were talking about the Japanese were buying up all this property and investing
yes.
to the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, so the question is now, this is nothing new, okay? And then and it became an issue. I mean, it wasn't as much, you know, a national security issue, but you heard the Hawks talking about what happens when. You know, these other people that you know don't have your best interest at heart owns X amount of your property.
Right.
And so now, I mean, was this not the issue when the Chinese took over the Panama Canal? Wasn't that, you know, the whole strategic way of not being able to get ships back and forth from one ocean to the other and blah, blah, blah. So if he's going to sell basically mineral rights, that's what it sounds like to me. He's going to try to pay off our debt by letting them extract oil and whatever else they can get. Is that where you're heading with this thing? That's what it sounded like to me.
Well, what it really boils down to is this. What it really boils down to is this. China is not comfortable owning this much of our debt based on the dollar. The dollar is going to devalue. It's going to create, you know, a lot of problems for China. They can't justify this kind of debt to their own people. So essentially what they're trying to do is, it's like anything else, in our financial markets, real estate is king. Paul, am I wrong in that? You know,
real estate makes a big difference, but ultimately it is the corporations that make that real estate either valuable or not. So
okay, I mean, I understand that. But, I mean, you know, real estate is a real asset. You know, you have a dollar bill in your pocket. That don't mean anything. You have 1 acre of land sitting on the ground that you own. That has value. That dollar bill's value doesn't mean anything. It's a piece of paper with some daggone ink on it. And that's what China's problem is right now. And what's going on here, as the Obama administration is so concerned that China is going to drop their money and quit lending to us, and we've got to look at this too, because if you look at the China's, you know, interest in our short-term treasury bills, China has reduced their short-term treasury bills to 97% of its holdings. They continue to drop back. China's holding a $573.7 billion in our short-term U.S. Treasury bills in August of 2008. Of course, this was prior to the bank bailouts and everything else that happened after the collapse of the U.S. mortgage market. But that was down to $5.96 billion. Now, you think about that. China dropped, you know, from $573.7 billion in August 2008 to $5.96 billion by March 2011. When it comes to our short-term T-bills, that's because they're concerned with the dollar. So China wants something to shore it up. And what puzzles me here, what really is alarming to me here, is that this president is willing to create these development zones that's going to allow Chinese business to come in here and bring their own workers with them. We've got Americans here who could do the job for any jobs that are created, but they're not going to have a chance at any new jobs that might be created. He's going to allow China to come in here, and he's giving them real estate, oil and gas markets, you name it, insert name here, infrastructure. That's the problem. He's trying to give them the daggone land and the corporate interest to go with it just to keep them on the hook so we can keep borrowing money from them. If that doesn't tell us that we have an alarming spending problem, we've got some serious issues.
But I would think even with that being said, that would sound like still a national security issue. I would think somebody would have to stand up and say, because, I mean, first of all, who's going to vet these people?
Well, that's the thing, because George Bush in 2005, George Bush was given the same opportunity. In 2005, they tried to buy up $18.4 billion Unico out of California, and George Bush, the administration, blocked it because they felt it was a national security risk. And everybody that I know, including my liberal friends, actually agreed with that. You know, because you don't want to give China already controls our money. Now they're going to control our energy. We've got some serious issues here. And it's very alarming. It really is. It's very alarming. And I don't understand why, you know, the American people are sitting back and not saying a word about it, or why no one is holding Barack Obama accountable. You know, when you look at this, and this is really alarming, because this is truly the one thing. Take all the conspiracy theories out of the mix. Take all the negative stuff we want about Barack Obama out of the mix. Take anything and everything you want, whether you're liberal, whether you're conservative, anything. But the reality is we're all Americans. We have a way of life. The liberals think they're free. The conservatives think they're free. And nobody really is free. But that's the conspiracy theory. We have a constitution, a set of rules that we're supposed to govern by. And by giving up our republic, our freedom, to a communist country, to allow them to control our money and our energy, the two things we rely on, should scare the hell out of everybody, and doesn't. And doesn't. And that's what I don't get. I'm at great odds with that. And I don't see anybody saying one thing about it. But, of course, what happens? Today, the House of Representatives voted to go ahead and raise the nation's debt ceiling without any regard for a top end. They have suspended the federal government's restriction on borrowing until late May. So Barack Obama can go out and borrow as much money as he wants to borrow all the way through late May without any repercussions whatsoever. And where do you think they're going to borrow that money from? They're going to go to China. China's going to say, okay, close on the deal we've been discussing. Bam, they're going to close on the deal. Welcome to Chi-America. Does that make sense?
I'm strategically positioning myself for that,
Ed. You know, I understand. And Andy had to drop off. You know, Paul, that's real interesting, though, because, you know, here we're now in a situation that we're going to go ahead and continue borrowing money. Instead of doing any spending plans, we're going to continue borrowing money. However, they did put the stunt into the bill. The legislation passed the House 285 to 144. Three dozen Republicans opposed the measure, and I'll have to find those names out and post them later. But they did put a provision in the bill that's supposedly going to force the Senate to write a budget that's going to suspend lawmakers' pay unless they pass a spending resolution. So they're putting all the heat on the Senate to pass a spending resolution. If they don't pass it, then none of Congress gets their paycheck until they do. It's basically a gimmick. It doesn't mean squat. The Senate hasn't written a spending bill for almost 4 years. But let me ask you this. Where does all spending supposed to originate from, Paul?
As I understand it, the House of Representatives.
Thank you. That's exactly it. All spending is supposed to originate in the House of Representatives. So how are we sitting here holding the Senate accountable to writing a spending resolution when the House is supposed to originate the spending, send it to the Senate, the Senate looks it over, agrees, disagrees, changes, amends, whatever, and sends it back, and then they work it out in committee? But no, now we're going to put all the onus of responsibility on the Senate. So that is the House, the Republican-led House, folks. All right, for those of you who think I'm just a daggone Democrat basher, the Republican-led House has just sent this provision to the Senate so that they don't have to deal with their job. Welcome to the land of John Boehner. Yeah, I know it's Boehner, Paul. You always correct me on that, but he's always Boehner to me. This is the thing. So how are we going to get fiscal accountability when neither side wants to take responsibility for what their job is supposed to be? I don't have an answer, Paul. Go ahead. I'm listening.
The Kentucky Long Rifle needs to come out of the closet and get all prepared for its next use.
Well, you know, and it sounds all well and good, but there's nobody going to do that. That's what's fascinating to me, because we're spending all this time talking about gun control and wanting to take away weapons, wanting to take away magazines, wanting to take away AR-15s, bushwhackers, bushmasters, you insert name here. You know, they're spending all this time trying to take your guns. And what I'm seeing more and more is the Second Amendment, if there was ever any doubt that the Second Amendment is more relevant today than it has been in recent years, I think you need look no further than right here at what we're talking about tonight. Well, we're going to allow the communist Chinese government to come in and take over America because our government refuses to spend wisely, spend cautiously, and protect our money, our resources, and do their job correctly, because they feel like we owe China something because they lent us money. I think this proves exactly why we need the Second Amendment. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The Second Amendment is there to protect against a tyrannical government. Can there be any doubt that we have a tyrannical government today?
Not in my mind.
Not in mine either. And that's the whole problem. And I don't understand why the American people, no matter what side of the coin you're on, just flat out doesn't get that. Even so-called conservatives out there today are jumping on board all this gun control laws, are jumping on board the Obama bandwagon. So-called conservatives. We had Republicans vote in the House today for this unsealing new spending that's going to take place between now and the end of May.
Well, and I think this kind of shows a continuation of the theme that I mentioned just a few minutes ago, and that is this mindset of appeasement. It's a very alluring concept.
Mm-hmm.
On the surface, you know, one that says, "Oh yeah, if I simply appease the other side, then the other side will not be a threat to me anymore." Well, I'm going to use a phrase that you like to use. The reality of that approach actually results in the other side becoming a bigger threat because they see how easy it is to get their opponent to acquiesce. They say, "Oh, wow, that was so easy. Let's go for more." And ultimately, the other side as a threat becomes the other side as a tyrant. And that's actually, stop and think about it, that particular analogy would apply to our government. At one time, our government was considered to be something that furthered the interests of the country and the benefit inured, if you will, to the citizens. Well, you can find lots and lots of people today that believe the government is a bigger threat and has enacted all sorts of laws and rules and regulations to get the citizens to acquiesce to the government's demands. So we fall into that trap, said, okay, I don't like that rule, I don't like that regulation, but I'll go along with it just because it'll keep the government off my back. And I think the proof is that since we have adopted that as a nation, we haven't gotten fewer rules or regulations, we've gotten more rules and regulations. And with every new rule, with every new regulation, with every new law, that is a loss of liberty and freedom. So
this concept
of appeasement, I think I'm in the bullseye on this, because that's what has been happening both in the United States and globally. So,
well, and I think you're ultimately right, too. And, you know, we're running short on time, Paul. I'm going to start wrapping this up. I appreciate you calling in, my friend. Thank you so much. As always, it's a real pleasure to have you on air. You know, for those of you guys who are planning on having, you know, Dale the Truth in here tonight, he apparently is still having problems. He wasn't able to get in. I apologize for that inconvenience. But, you know, I've got to tell you, folks, we have got serious problems in this country. We have got serious issues with leadership, or I should say so-called leadership. When we start allowing communist countries, we have spent our history fighting communism. We brought down the Berlin Wall. We've been in Korea, Japan, you know, Russia. We have done all of these things throughout our history. We have sacrificed thousands and thousands of Americans' lives to protect our way of life, the American way of life, this great little republic that we have here. And all of a sudden, over the last couple of decades, we've seen an erosion of that republic, of that liberty, of those freedoms. We understand that. We expect that there's going to be some things that we're going to have to compromise on. But to acquiesce to someone else's way of life out of weakness or fear is not the American way of life. The fact that our mainstream media will not do the hard reporting and bring this to mainstream America tells you right now that we no longer have a free press. We have a communist press. Yes, I'm talking to you, Gannett. Yes, I'm talking to you, CNN. Yes, I'm talking to you, MSNBC. Yes, 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 and even Fox News. Our press no longer wants to tell us what's going on and let us make our minds up. They want to control. They want to dominate. They want to tell us their version of things. They are an inherent willing partner with the liberal agenda that is going to destroy the United States of America. Check out LouisvillePolitics.com. There's a couple of links on today's article, He Who Controls the Money, that's going to help you see everything that we're talking about tonight with China. And if you're not disturbed after reading that, if you don't send that to everybody you know and have them start paying attention to this and demanding better, then I'm sorry. I've got to question your patriotism. Even if you're a regular listener of this show, because Chimerica is alive and well. Chimerica is coming soon to our shores. We need no further proof of it. We have all the proof we need right now. The question is, can you do the job that mainstream media won't do? And I'm challenging you to send this information forward. This message has to get out. Our very way of life may ultimately depend on it. That's it for tonight, folks. Tomorrow night, Dale the Truth will be here at 7 o'clock, unless we've still got problems. If he is not, I'm sure you will be stuck with me, and that's okay. I don't mind. But tune in tomorrow night at 7. We'll get into some more liberty and freedom issues. And don't forget, on Sunday night at 7 o'clock, our good friend Kim Mulman with Liberty Unbridled. Until then, you folks have a great night. Take care.